Welcome to Mediocre Movies, where we're on the quest to find the most okay movie of all time. The McCafe coffee of movies.
The flat white.
The flat white.
We had a flat white just before.
Yeah. It's a very okay.
Was it just
it's
okay.
Just an okay coffee.
The experience? Yeah. Out of 10, what would you rank it?
Five.
Wow.
Yeah.
And McCafe flat white. I was like, this is a five.
Little,
not bad.
A little foamy.
Yeah.
Little cough, little bitter.
But fine.
But
probably should have used some sugars in them, but I didn't tell you, so
yeah,
that's
fine.
This week, my name's Riley, and I'm joined by...
Keaton, what's going on?
This is B-Rad, Brad.
And I'm Cal.
This is the usual crew, actually. This is like the...
Okay. Oh, we're back,
really,
yeah.
We need some serious diversity. We've got four people here who just do it all the time.
That's because I have three friends, and it's you three guys.
Unfortunate us.
Don't cry.
So we watched Wolf Creek.
Yes.
It is directed by Greg McLean. Actually, this is going to be a special episode because
We watched Wolf Creek and Wolf Creek 2.
And I don't have enough to say about either movie, so we're going to do both.
And I did not watch either of the movies. I watched the
so it's good that you're on here.
Yeah, it's good that I'm here, because I can speak with a great amount of authority about these films. I watched the second half of number two.
Excellent.
When you finally made it.
This
is going to be fine. We'll start with Wolf Creek, which has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 53. And you did see this when you were 10.
I saw this when I was much younger.
And to give context, that was like 11 years ago.
That was 2 years ago.
What I've written down is... I hated this movie. I'm going to open with that. I did not like either of these movies.
Okay, I'm not entirely sure why you can just straight out say, hate these movies.
Yeah.
I want you to explain why you hated these films.
I think the first one was better than the second one. I'm going to speak of these movies in the context of each other. And the first one, he was scarier than he was in the second one.
Wait, sorry, who?
The bad guy.
Yeah, the
bad
guy. So Mick Taylor. Australian actor John Jarrett.
Yeah, sure. Whoever it is.
So Mick.
Yeah,
so main villain, basically.
The series is about, I would say.
And I think that was kind of an established thing. Like, I just remember when the first one came out, it was kind of like, this is, like, straight, grueling horror.
Yeah.
I feel. And then, like...
I didn't think it was.
And the second one, like, he's cracking jokes at the end of the movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, by the time you get to... And it just feels...
Yeah, kind of stupid.
Yeah.
That's what I didn't like about the second. We'll dive into that.
Yeah.
I didn't like any of the characters in the first movie. I didn't like the tourist or the Australian dude who were driving the car. To give context for this movie, if you haven't seen it, is about three tourists who drive to somewhere in Australia.
The Wolf Creek Crater.
They're
on a trip, on a road trip in outback Australia. So it's one Aussie bloke, but he's from the city. So a very different kind of cultural style.
What is called in the movie by Mick Taylor, the poofta capital of Australia.
Which I mean makes sense. I mean,
which
means? Newtown.
Yeah.
I would say Melbourne. He was from Sydney though. Melbourne, I would say.
Well, this is a changing
When you start murdering people, and then you can change your opinion.
Yeah,
all right,
fair enough.
So I hated all these characters.
Right.
Because I found, none of them were believable, and none of them were likable, I don't think. And only when she really kind of showed her true colours and rescued her friend in the middle of the movie, or towards the end, I was like, hey, now I know who I'm meant to be going for.
Yeah. Did you think you were meant to be going for Mick Taylor at the start of the movie?
I don't think you were meant to be going for him, but like he doesn't obviously show himself to be a bad guy until he...
starts killing people.
Because he's just a guy who helps them with their car. And then you're like, oh, okay, this is going to be them rescued. If you don't know this is a horror movie, it doesn't seem like it's going to become a horror movie. Until it becomes a horror movie, which I think is the point of it. And it takes a long time to get there.
Yeah, like just for a bit of context, I don't... Like, the movie is kind of based... loosely on like real, you know,
Ivan
Milat backpacker.
Yeah, like the backpacker murders of Ivan Milat, who wasn't an outback killer, but he killed people in the forests.
In the forest near Sydney.
Yeah, Sydney and Wollongong, near where we are.
Spooky.
And then there
was
the murder of Peter Falconio, which was an outback murder, and that's never been. They've never found his body, but that's been solved, quote unquote. They're very much based on those.
And so basically, like for a quick rundown, Ivan Milat was the backpack killer. Notorious, basically what he did was he lured tourists or backpackers, especially
by hitchhiking,
who were hitchhikers, basically pick them up in his ute and then would take them out to the forests near, like, Belengalo Forest, and then murder them. Pretty gruesome stuff. And he's Australia's most notorious serial killer.
Yeah. I would say. He's now in Goulburn for life.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, he does some interesting stuff every now and again. I think he cut off a finger and sent it to someone because he went on PlayStation or something. Yeah. Which is just
I thought he cut it off because he wanted parole and he wanted to get out. And he was I know how I'll show him innocent.
He wants to play Crash Bandicoot.
I'm pretty sure at this point he's cut off like at least half a hand. He's trying to get different things.
He swallowed a couple of razors too.
Yeah.
He's not in a good place. But anyway, point. Goulburn. Talking Goulburn. Not a good place.
He's actually free. But he's not allowed to leave Goulburn.
In regards to
what a punishment worse than death.
In regards to Wolf Creek, I don't think it takes a long time for him to become the villain. I think
it takes a good half an hour, 45 minutes.
But I mean, that's the slow burn, though. That's not uncommon. What the issue is that the first half hour is really slow. It just feels really, really slow. It feels really dragged out. That might be what you're referring to more so than the fact that it takes a long time for him to become the villain. Because in terms of the chronology of a way a movie is or a story is written, that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
It's just that the pacing
for
is really
this
slow.
Type of movie, I think.
Is, yeah, exactly, like, especially, yeah.
Yeah, like, you can... It definitely takes, definitely takes on the format of something like, you know, I remember it being a lot like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where you just have a group of people, and it's kind of like, there's just a slow burn, and you just
It's a slow burn.
You introduce sort of the setting and that sort of thing, and I imagine that's probably
how it
plays out. Like,
yeah.
That sort of beats. And then it sort of hits a crescendo, and then you're kind of just into the
Then you're into the actual...
You know.
I mean...
Because, you know, it would be kind of grueling to just, like, from the start.
From the start, I agree.
Yeah. You know, if you're just like...
That's why I didn't like the second one. I didn't like the second one for the opposite reasons that I didn't like the first one.
I'm starting to feel that
maybe I just don't like these kind of movies.
The slow burn. Yeah. I mean, the slow burn appeals to a particular kind of...
Not that I don't like slow burns. No, I mean, that's against fair. That. It's just that I think this movie didn't do a great job of it. One of the big flaws that I wrote down is that the first half hour feels like a tourism ad. Because, like, it's shots... And this is the problem with, I think, a lot of Australian film, and I'm going to talk just a little bit more widely, is that Australian films... Sorry. I keep smacking the table, so that's really going to be uncomfortable for the listener. So it feels like a tourism ad. And I think that a lot of the shots in the movie, you could put in a Qantas ad.
Yeah.
Or a, you know, Visit Australia ad that you would display.
But then
obviously not the back half of the movie, because that would be a poor idea for an ad, but...
Yeah.
But I mean, to retort to that, though, it's kind of like any... You could make that assumption about any movie that uses a lot of landscape shots. Lord of the Rings could be a tourism ad for New Zealand.
Which it was.
127 Hours could be a tourism ad for Grand Canyon or Utah. Yeah. You know, I would say that the only reason we can point out this is a tourism ad for Australia, quote unquote, is because it's an international... it was a movie, an Australian movie made in Australia that has managed to breach it into the international crowd, which is kind of an unusual thing.
Are you sort of talking just broadly? Because I remember you talking about the...
Like Australian films tend
to... Does Film Australia incentivizes by...
They kind of say that... to make money, they kind of, you need these kind of things.
Is that like an established thing that
a lot of Australian films are kind of, when made by Australian, like Screen Australia or whatever, they're kind of incentivized to help promote Australia as a tourism destination, because that's where, like, Australia makes a lot of its money.
Yeah,
is through tourism. And like, you watch the opening shots of this movie, and you have the big beach shots, the big, like, outback, beautiful, like, looking, the Wolf Creek crater, and like all these shots that are just really nice, established shots of like beautiful landscapes and everything.
Yeah, and which just broadly speaking, you probably wouldn't be able to get if you were, like, if you were just doing this as a small budget film.
Yeah.
You know, without the help of those things. So they probably, I think that's probably a reasonable assumption.
I agree with Keaton on the fact that, like, a lot of movies do this when they set the location, but There's a lot of these shots.
See, I feel like, because it's only in the first bit, it's up until the part where John Jarrett enters. Yes. And all this tourism stuff's here. And I feel like that's the point.
Yeah,
because possibly. The characters that you're introduced to first are like backpackers, they're traveling across Australia. So that's why they're having all these beautiful shots. You're supposed to be like, okay, we're experiencing this with them.
It's still tourist mode at that point.
Yeah.
Until
the horror hasn't kicked
exactly,
in.
Exactly, until
And I think that's also why the first act of the film is that slow, because...
Yeah.
It's not a quick trip getting across the outback.
No.
It's supposed to drag on.
Well, yeah.
And, like, by dragging on that much, you're supposed to, like, okay, hurry up, something needs to happen here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be kind of sympathizing with the backpackers in that case. And then when John Jarrett enters, it goes a lot quicker. The tourism ads kind of cut in half and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Because it rapidly changes pitch because you're supposed to be identifying at that point with the backpackers.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I can see where you're coming from 100%, Riley. Like, so the way I would classify this film, and other people have classified it as, like, an exploitation, or I would call it an Ozploitation film. Like, you know, it's a film... with a very niche kind of market that they're aiming for, and they're exploiting that specific market, which is Australia. It's like a Australiana.
If, like, I would agree with that, but I wouldn't say it's for Australia. I would say it's violence against women. Like, the exploitation is that a man...
Well...
Like, because the guy, he is tortured, but he's not. He's, like, nailed to a cross. And then he immediately just kind of escapes and runs away, and he's
fine. No, but, like, exploitation in terms of, like, the audience that they're looking at for people who are interested in Australia. Because, so, it's kind of that juxtaposition between the outback, the real, true Aussie, which is what's being exploited, versus the modern day world, which is tourists and, you know, city dwellers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he built himself up to be as a guy.
It's like, you can see it even more clearly in number two, in Wolf Creek 2, especially during the torture scene between the British bloke and McTaylor, when they're talking about the history of Australia and, like, you know...
Doing trivia
and whatnot. And so... to me, that's where the exploitation comes from. I mean, there was a huge case, about violence against women.
I think that's why one of the reasons I really did not enjoy this movie.
It's overly gratuitous.
It's overly gratuitous violence.
Remembering this movie came out at around the same time as, like, Saw was kind of coming out, which was made by, like, two Australian dudes. But, like, that movie sort of came out. So there was kind of maybe a little bit of a spotlight because, okay, you've got these two... like Australian film school guys who, you know,
made this great franchise,
great film, great real, like in
quotes.
Saw 1 is great.
Saw 2 is good as well. But
we can watch Saw 4 for this just to quickly show how far that franchise falls.
So I think the spotlight was maybe there, so I can kind of understand why that type of movie did take off and that sort of stuff. In terms of like exploitation of or like violence, like the violence depicted, because it was dabbling in like real world sort of issues. Content
context.
It's like a lot of young girls did get murdered in the backpacker thing, so
that's
like,
true actually that,
but it's not
that's,
like
that's
it's
true.
Not an unfair portion, it's about split five and Malat.
I would say perhaps maybe with the real issue is that the what's the director's name again?
Craig McLean
probably was being a bit over the top in terms of the violence that was being portrayed.
And gratuity.
Like there was a lot of you can tell it's a slasher film. Like it's very much the bloody and gory and kind of what Texas Chainsaw Massacre, kind of, you know, these kind of things ring in mind. And for that reason, it's kind of like I can see both sides of the coin that yes, there is a lot of violence against women, but also at the same time,
well, like in the first film, there's a small amount of violence against a man, but he never like encounters Mick. Like he gets off the crew. For those who don't know, while the other two are getting murdered and raped, he's stuck in a cave on a crucifix with a dog in a cage, and he just gets himself off the crucifix, which admittedly looked painful. And then he just runs away. It just does the title cards of Ben escaped. Ben talked to the police.
It's fair to remember, though, that I think Brad makes an excellent point in saying that Mick's character is an amalgamation of, in this case, Ivan Milat, who was notorious for killing backpackers and then performing sexual acts on them. mostly women in terms of the sexual acts.
Yes.
Right? So, in which case, I can, on some level, understand...
The choice to go
showing so much on the women and less on the men.
Yeah.
I think...
I mean, again, yes, it raises questions on morality, which I agree with.
But it's like kind of the fact that neither of them got away and the guy didn't have to do anything and he left.
But that's kind of horror movies. Like, yeah. I think you're meant to be left with like a pit in your stomach. I don't think you're meant to be like, and then they get away. They're a little busted and bruised, but they got away. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
but the guy's like busted and bruised and he got away and he didn't have to do anything. And it's kind of like, he should have been the one that died in this movie, yeah. I think.
But the movie is intended to shock. I think when it came out, it was intended to be like but a shocking
film. I didn't feel shocked when watching it. Yeah. At no point was I, like, moved or at the edge of my seat or kind of scared of anything.
Yeah.
And, like, I think we discussed it while watching it, that he's kind of a supernatural figure in the movie because he keeps, like, dying.
Yeah.
He dies. Yes. Which
is a total trope of, like, the slasher. It's like you push Michael Myers out the window, then you go and look and he's, you know, taken off. Like, you know what I mean? It's like... So, yeah, it's definitely...
Yeah, it was weird. I didn't really... I don't know, I didn't take to that as much. Cal, because
I think that's the whole reason why at the end Ben escapes in the first one. Is because, like, you have to look at it as Mick Taylor being some sort of supernatural being. And, like, they expand on this throughout the franchise as well. Particularly in the television series. But with the first one, he escapes in order to kind of... further that legend of
Mick
Taylor, the Outback murderer.
Because
if he just
survivor.
Killed all three of them, no one's going to fucking know.
Yeah.
No one's going to know. But by having one of them survive, it kind of showcases, okay, yeah, there's a guy out here doing this thing. But you can't prove it because the bodies were never found, like they say at the end.
Yeah.
It's kind of just having with that supernatural, feeling towards it. Like, I feel like that's a very... And it also kind of echoes back into the more... like indigenous culture as well with their like methods of telling stories and myths and stuff. Yeah. And like, it's kind of a modern Australian callback into early indigenous culture and like outback culture.
I think
by having this as a supernatural being who goes around killing people.
Yeah. I think like, and this, like a lot of films that are set in the outback, like recently, I watched, Walkabout, which is a really great film. But the sort of, and back to just the landscape for a little bit, like if we're looking at like location as character,
the Outback's a good choice.
And the Outback offers like an opportunity to do, like, you know, they sort of describe the Outback in Walkabout as almost being like hallucinogenic, nightmarish. Like you have these almost like alien sort of creatures, and it is almost alien, you know what I mean? It's so like
things are sparse and there's not,
yeah.
What I enjoyed about Wolf Creek more than Wolf Creek 2 is that Wolf Creek is pretty much all, like, the scary parts are all set in the dark, enclosed locations.
Yeah.
And, like, it's tight, it's claustrophobic, and it's confined, and you're kind of... And it feels like that, and that's how the movie feels. Yeah. And when you go to Wolf Creek 2, you don't have that.
Yeah, everything's well lit like that.
Everything's well lit and very far apart from each other. And kind of, like, you can see what's happening. And I think to Wolf Creek's credit, even though I did not enjoy it, I do think it is a better horror movie than Wolf Creek 2. But I still don't... Again, personal taste, and this is entirely subjective.
No, I agree. I think you make a good point in saying that Wolf Creek 1, to me, feels like it's more grounded in reality.
It made Mick Taylor rare. And I think that's what... Like, he didn't have heaps of screen time. And when he showed up...
He's the shark in Jaws.
It was the shark in Jaws. He was powerful. You didn't see him often, but when he did, he fucked shit up.
Yeah.
And then he kind of disappeared again.
Yeah.
And you're kind of waiting for him to come back. And in Wolf Creek 2...
Well, in Wolf Creek 2, I feel like they took liberties on the idea of, like, you know, becoming larger than the man. He's become a myth and a legend by that point, right?
I didn't like that as much.
I think, and you can see a similar progression in something like... A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Where
Freddy
goes from being like this sort of boogeyman.
Mystery, hiding in the shadows to a man who's standing in broad daylight.
Yeah, and just, you know, making jokes and that sort of stuff.
And
it's
I
like,
didn't like that.
That version of the character is definitely, I don't know, like what the TV show is like.
See, I think like with Wolf Creek, if I had to compare like the films with another set of films, I'd compare it to the Evil Dead franchise. Yeah. Because the first one's very much just a straight horror film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it's aiming to be. It even has, like, similarities in the slow build-up, and then when shit hits the fan, it kind of just goes everywhere.
But see, that's a movie that I really enjoy, and I'm trying to find what I don't like.
And with Evil Dead 2, you kind of see it move more towards, less from being pure horror, more towards horror comedy. And, like, they have that comedic element. And I think that's what Wolf Creek 2 goes for. Like, there's that scene with the fucking kangaroos bouncing along that they keep hitting with the truck. Like,
yeah,
that's ridiculous enough, and it keeps happening.
The
it kind of just becomes surrealist, like,
with the bus with the truck exploding.
That great scene.
It's so stupid.
It's
and
just
that's what I didn't like.
Exactly. Like, they take the what you expect from an exploitation film, as we were talking about earlier, and they just ratchet it up to unrealistic points, and that's where the comedy comes from in that film.
But I don't
like, you're not supposed to be like, oh, this is realistic, I'm not enjoying this because it's so over the fucking top that you're supposed to be like,
maybe,
this is stupid.
Maybe that's the thing. Like, I don't think you're supposed to enjoy some of the violence and stuff in Wolf Creek 1. Because, again, it feels like it was going from, like, a more earnest thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Wolf Creek 2, it's kind of like the horror sequel.
Yeah. Well, which kind of... I think it's the exact same thing with Saw, right? The Saw franchise. You look at Saw 1, right? In my mind, the whole thing about Saw 1 is... and why I loved Saw 1 so much is because it's so gritty. They work with very little tools. It's in one room.
Yeah.
Whereas with the progression of the Saw franchises, like up to, like, you know, Saw 4, the whole thing is torture porn by that point. It's like these crazy contraptions and devious ways to kill
someone. And it becomes about that gimmick.
And it becomes about that gimmick, exactly.
So it's like, you know, like Saw 1 is a really great detective story.
Oh, I reckon.
It's up there with like
it's
7
really good.
In terms
really
of
good.
Like really good detective thrillers, you know what I mean? And it's like beyond that, it's just,
see,
you know.
I think the thing with, like, especially Wolf Creek, but also just horror franchises in general, is that, like, once you move past the first, maybe second movie, it just becomes about the person doing the killing.
Yes.
And especially that was true in Wolf Creek, because you're not supposed to root for the English guy in Wolf Creek 2.
No.
You're supposed to root for
Mick Taylor
because he's the main character of that film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas in the first one, you're supposed to root for and sympathize with the backpackers.
Yeah.
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 But the problem is that they were so, like, bland as characters.
They were.
That's
why I didn't like...
Most people... Like, I definitely did. I ended up rooting for Mick Taylor because Mick Taylor's fucking... He's very interesting.
I really like how
he's written, like, in terms of a character.
Not rooting for
him,
but
I'm more invested in him.
Yeah.
Because he's interesting.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's definitely a more interesting character. That's the reason why the second one focused so much on him.
Yeah.
Was because he had such a breakout performance in the original Wolf Creek.
Yeah.
They were like, we need to give John Jarrett a shitload more screen time, which is understandable because he's a very, like, if that's a character that John Jarrett's going to be remembered for, it's going to be Mick Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that's by far his biggest and probably best role.
Yeah.
And
this is kind of like, I know obviously there was a lot of like kind of schlocky horror that came out of Australia in like the 70s and the 80s. Nothing of like note, really. I think like Razorback is probably the most well-known Australian horror movie. And then you don't really get
anything.
Even
then, I don't really know.
Yeah, you don't even really get anything up until that. You know what I mean? Like Wolf Creek is kind of the first truly...
Modern,
kind of like Australian slasher films in a way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like it's been imitated and it's kind of now everybody's making a slasher film.
Yeah, see, I'd say it kind of revived the Australian like horror industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
like
you look at the films before this, like in terms of horror films, there's not really a lot that, as you were saying, like I can only think off the top of my head, Picnic at Hanging Rock. But the only horror there is that it's really bad.
Cal hates Picnic at Hanging Rock.
It's an Australian classic, but I fucking hate that film.
Yeah.
But that's not the time or place. But
John
like
Jarrett's also in that.
Yeah, he is. But he wasn't murdering people, so it wasn't good. But you look after that. There's like, you know, The Loved Ones also came out.
Yeah.
And there's just been a one about, I can't think, Van Diemen's Land maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
The one where they have the cannibals in Tasmania.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
There's just been so many horror films after that. Wolf Creek's very much the focal founding point of that because of how, like, it was made and because of how strange it is.
Yeah. And I think, even though I don't think by any means Wolf Creek is a great film, I think it's an important film in the canon of Australian films. Because, like you were saying...
I don't disagree with that.
It's revived an interest in films being made in Australia, which is great for us creatives out there living in Australia. So I think that's important. And also, I just wanted to say, even though you guys give Wolf Creek 2 a lot of shit, and I 100% agree that Wolf Creek 1 is scarier because it's tight, it's claustrophobic, it's grounded in reality, it's dirty,
it's gritty. I'm not saying I'm scared,
No,
nobody tweet at me that I'm scared.
Huge scary.
It's scarier. Yeah. Number 2 just feels like an unrelenting force that just never gives.
Yeah.
And I think number two is
more of like an Ozploitation.
Yes, it's definitely, I agree, like, 100%.
See, I didn't have that mindset because we watched these like almost immediately back to back. And I was like in the mindset of one, and I was like,
Did you see like a tonal shift completely?
Oh, I saw a huge
shift.
Did you, when watching it?
I saw it, but like, my mind wasn't like,
yeah.
My mind wasn't like, this is going to be an entirely different film. Because like, when I watched Evil Dead 1 and 2 and then 3, even kind of like, oh, you can really feel like the tone kind of changed. Like Bruce Campbell just kicks it up like three notches to like a million, and he's like, I'm going to be ridiculous.
Well, I mean, between 2 and 3 in the Evil Dead franchise, that's fair.
Yeah.
But the first two are essentially the same film.
It's the exact same film, but he kind of...
John Jarrett going back to the Middle Ages. When?
That's Wolf Creek Season 2 coming out.
Oh my god, that'd be phenomenal.
Yes, actually. And Cal, when we watched it or finished it, he told me what the TV series is about. And I actually prefer the idea of the TV series more than I like the premise of the movie.
Well, the thing with the TV series is, like, and I'm not 100% sure on this because Season 2 is in production at the moment, but that's an anthology series as well. So they're just telling more stories about Mick Taylor.
Yeah.
So, but like the first one with Season 1 is that they completely subvert the... like, what Wolf Creek is. Like, you think of Wolf Creek, it's John Jarrett kills a bunch of people.
Yeah.
With the first season of the show, it's inverted. Someone hunting down John Jarrett and Mick Taylor.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, they flip it on its head because they're like, okay, we need to... And that's how they expand on all the themes that they hit in that first season. Not the first season, in the films.
Yeah.
It's like, they just kind of expand on that in a lot better way, and like it really hits that whole supernatural thing we were talking about earlier.
This is
like it goes down that well level.
I've kind of always said this about Mad Max, but I think it kind of does also apply to Mick Taylor. Idea that like each of the different Mad Max stories is kind of somebody else's telling of that story, which goes like again back to that. I don't know if that's something
the oral history and folklore,
that sort of stuff. I feel like that definitely is what Wolf Creek kind of is, and it's like a man from the desert
is hunting people,
and it's like, but it's like that can take different forms and like become different things.
Well, all the Mad Max movies are very, very...
Totally different.
Totally different, but like very similar kind of plot.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, if I tell you a story, it's Chinese Whispers.
Yeah.
And like, if you look at these movies like that, I think it's kind of very similar, where you can kind of be like, one and two are similar, but details have swapped.
You're meant to infer kind of that the survivors, and like this is a point you made a little earlier, but like the survivors of each story kind of tells the story.
Yeah.
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 You know.
Although somehow Ben knew all those other things.
But I mean, it's like, yeah, you know.
But that's, yeah.
The survivors are supposed to tell the story to reinforce the legend, to make Mick Taylor an even bigger legend.
Yeah.
He's become more than just a man.
If I can... I thought the acting in the first movie was quite poor. I don't know. I just kind of noticed at some points they were very stiff. Like at the campfire when they're hanging around, they kind of don't...
I think
it's not believable, but I also kind of get that idea. That
it's more just like, that's just the pitfalls of making an indie film. In Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, well...
With the exception of John Jarrett, no one's good in either of these films.
No, Ryan Kaur's all right. He did Silver Sun.
Accents, yeah. Just because he's in Silver Sun doesn't mean he's a fucking Academy Award winner.
Hashtag bring back Silver Sun.
ABC, if you're listening.
like Ryan Cole's alright, but he's like... The thing that I hate about these films is that they got Australian actors to play British.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they got Australian actors to play foreigners.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't work. Like, Ryan Cole, Australian actor, British accent was, like, decent in parts, and then there were other parts where it was just hot garbage.
Yeah.
Like, whereas with John Jarrett, like, he
played a show.
He's a very good actor, I feel. Like, and I'd argue that he's a good actor.
And a scary dude. I've met him once.
Have you?
Yeah, he was at
Murdy's Family.
Supernova. I'm like, oh, hey, you're from Wolf Creek.
I was like, yeah, I'll fucking kill you, mate.
Yeah.
Also, I'm sorry, sir.
A Wollongong local, so shout out to John Jarrett.
John Jarrett, is he sick?
He was born near Mount Kira or Campbell.
Down there. Wow.
I feel like he's a very good actor, and like he's very good in his
role. I don't think it was bad. I just didn't like the character, or I didn't like the character specifically in the second. And the reason is, and you disagree with me on this, And that's fine. He kind of gives the reason that he's killing all these people because he's cleaning the earth of foreign... cleaning Australia of foreign scum. But in Wolf Creek 2, he kills more Australians than he kills...
No.
Okay, but okay. See, this has a reason behind it.
Cal and I were discussing this.
Yeah. You think this, and I disagree with this reason, but explain your reason.
Okay, so in Wolf Creek 2... First of all, in Wolf Creek 2, it's much more based on Ozploitation. You know, it's trying to reinforce that image of the classic patriotic Australia.
Yeah.
And Mick Taylor is supposed to be the epicenter of that. Mm-hmm. And so when he's killing these people, which you find out through, in my opinion, the best scene of Wolf Creek 2, in his interrogation of the British dude.
Yeah,
right.
And they're going through Australian history. You kind of understand that he's a patriot. Well, you know, he believes he's a patriot. He believes he's cleaning the earth. And so the reason he kills all these people is because he dislikes foreigners coming on Australian soil. He wants Australia to be 100% Australia, and he is 100% Australia. And so you're saying that he kills a lot of cops, which he does, and he kills a lot of Australians, which he does. But what Cal and I were saying is that in Mick Taylor's mindset, they aren't true Australians.
Yeah.
Because they're not being patriotic. They're if they were truly Aussies, if they were truly patriotic, they would be on Mick Taylor's side.
Yeah. Like, let's go over the murders in the second film. There's, like, excluding the foreigners, because there's the two Germans that he kills. There's the two who helped the English guy in the house.
Yep.
Yep.
And there's the two cops.
Yeah. And the two cops, yeah.
So
why does he kill the two cops?
He kills the two cops because they got in his way, okay?
But they gave him a ticket.
They gave him a ticket, which is un-Australian. You don't give people tickets.
Yeah.
In his
view... They would give him a slap on the back.
In his view, pulling someone over for no reason and just fucking with them and giving them a ticket despite being fine. Because he was under the limit.
Yeah.
He didn't know that, though.
He did know that. That's why he went and killed them.
Yeah.
Because he was like, you've just done fucking forced taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
Like to give me
bloody revenue raising.
Revenue raising.
That's un-Australian.
Yeah.
So that's why he killed
bloody
the cops.
Politicians gave a pay raise.
Because, like.
Which makes him a scarier character because you know a dude who's
that's
like
why
that.
I'm it's saying.
You know somebody who's like
that's
that.
Exactly.
This film's become more relevant since 2013. Oh, like, especially with the re-rise of Pauline Hanson and One Nation.
Oh, yeah.
It's just become something that's like. The opinion, especially with Trump and Brexit, like all around the world, we're seeing more and more like my opinion's right and you're wrong.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why,
and that's what Mick Taylor is.
And that's why I actually, in some levels, genuinely kind of enjoyed Wolf Creek 2 because it's relevant now. Like if I had watched it maybe 5 years ago, maybe a bit less. And also I was a bit less politically aware then as well. Right. But the fact that I know people like this. Mm-hmm. I've talked to people like this. Mm-hmm. I see people like this.
You see people who, like, their first reaction is, like, hang them up by the neck. And it's, like, that sort of, like, you know...
That done literally.
Yeah, exactly. See, you would think that Mick Taylor is an exaggeration or a caricature or someone. And I'm sure at the time he was. But now that caricature is a reality for a lot of people. That's genuinely scary. Right?
I see, it doesn't that... I mean, that kind of motive, I don't think it's very clear in the film.
I'd argue it's very clear in the film.
I would argue
it's like that's probably the driving force of the film.
When he kills the backpackers, that's clear. I think that's clear, but I don't know. It just doesn't feel to me.
I don't think it's made clear in the first one.
It's not made clear.
I think there's a line or two that's very throwaway about how he hates foreigners. He wants to get
rid of them. But the first one, I don't think in the first one he has to have a reason. Because he's just he's a spooky boogeyman who murders. And he's in the outback.
That's
and you're kind of like he's so sparse. And he's not in that film, and he doesn't have much dialogue with anybody else in that whole movie, apart from when he's like, "I'm gonna murder you," or he says something along those lines. And you're like, "Good, you don't have to explain yourself." But because the second movie is so much about him, and like it's 95% about him, and not really about anyone else. I mean, the first people he murders, they're introduced in the scene where they're murdered.
So like, okay, look. So the way I looked at it was,
it's the cops. Cops are the first people.
The first backpackers. They're not introduced in the first scene. He murders them, but they don't get much screen time.
The reason why I enjoyed that scene between him and the British dude so much was because that's, in my opinion, almost the only scene where you actually understand
why he's
and you
doing
get
what he's
you
doing.
Get time to understand who he is as a character and why he's doing what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the way that they did it is justifiable enough for his character and his actions and his motives.
Maybe I just didn't extrapolate that from that. That might be just the problem. That I never quite got that from that scene is that why, like, he didn't talk about, he was like, I'm gonna get rid of, like, all foreign scum. And I was like, all right, I get it, like, you don't like backpackers because we're annoying.
And I will I will say as well that it helps because I am currently, as of right now, really aware of these things going on.
Yeah.
Right? And I see the relevance in that. So I can see the realism in the character and the actions. That helps. You, on the other hand, I don't know how accustomed you are to this kind of rhetoric or this kind of,
I've been backpacking.
Oh, no, but, like, you know, of the idea of, like, the outback Aussie patriot.
I've been who
hates tourists.
I think, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, well, it's not like people like tourists. There's not, like, the people who like tourists are the people who make a lot of money from tourists. Most of us are just like, all right, tourists are here.
Okay, well, like, the white supremacist Aussie national patriot, for example.
But even
if
white supremacists, he wouldn't mind British people.
True. I think...
No, but they're not Aussie, though.
Yeah, they're not Aussie.
They're not Aussie, they're Brits.
Just because they came here first doesn't make them Aussie.
And that's why when the British dude was answering all these questions correctly, he still sawed off his fingers because he's being...
He changed
it. Well, because he was being fucking smug
because
about
he was
it.
Being a smug about it. Yeah. But that's not an Australian thing.
A pommy bastard.
That's what a pommy bastard would do.
I think, yeah, like...
I couldn't extrapolate that from that. That's the problem.
I think if you, like, kind of look at... Because all horror, like, if you're looking at this as a horror film first and foremost, you can look at number one probably as, like, a straight kind of...
It's a straight horror.
Yeah, just as a straight... Well, not as a straight horror, but just, like, a retelling, which it's not, but it's packaged in that way of, like, true events, right? And it's, like, that's kind of not horror in the same way that, like, Friday 13th is horror.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's, like, the Mick Taylor in number two, from what you guys are saying, is kind of this elemental sort of force in number two. He is kind of like created by, you know, like Jason is kind of like, Jason in Friday 13th is kind of sent to punish, like, you know, degenerate behavior, things like premarital sex, drug taking, drinking alcohol. Those people get punished in those movies, right? And so, I mean, you could kind of make the argument that, like, the backpackers, like, he's kind of sent as this elemental force to
thin the herd.
To thin the herd of these, like, backpackers who, like, come to the country, don't really care about it, which on, like, a weird other level, like, not... I'm probably getting a little bit too deep here, but, like, if you can kind of imagine the Outback creating a boogeyman.
Yeah.
Right? If John... If Mick Taylor was kind of created... Not in the literal sense, but in the sort of metaphysical sense, out of, you know, the sort of wrath of a very ancient land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The idea of, like, people just coming in sort of... I don't know, again, having not watched either of the films in...
No, I agree.
And in recent memory. Do the British backpackers... Or do the backpackers ever sort of mistreat the Outback? Do they ever
I think... The in the mindset of someone like Mick Taylor, just purely the fact that they are foreigners coming to
Australia, he's trashing the
Outback. Is because
he's burning like an esky and like crap at his hideout, and he's burnt all his rubbish. Which, I mean, if you follow Always Sunny in Philadelphia, that's how you make stars from the rubbish burning. But
I mean,
it's actually very bad for the environment.
I don't think there's any one of us who denies there's 100% a level of hypocrisy. But that's a very real thing.
Yeah.
A hypocrite, right?
Yeah.
And I agree with you. And I think the fact that these city dwellers and these tourists come into the Outback and kind of don't know anything about it is disrespectful enough to warrant him cleansing
it. So on like kind of a metaphysical level, you can kind of imagine...
He's the protector of the land.
Yeah, almost. In a really weird sort of...
Well, that's what he thinks he is. That's what he thinks he is.
So it's like... I don't know. That's kind
I agree.
I'm reaching for
I agree.
That.
The thing that bothered me about Wolf Creek 2, and when I realised that, I realised about Wolf Creek 1, is that it's kind of this... I mean, it's a typical horror, but it's the same kind of 15, 20 minutes of plot, which Ryan Corey escapes. They do like a little chase scene. He kind of slips him again. He gets caught. He holds him a bit, and then Ryan just kind of does whatever and slips out again. And like that happens 3 or 4 times in the film. And on the second, on third time, I was like, okay. I get it. And then the last time is when they do...
It's cat and mouse. It's
cat and mouse. And, like, I'm not to say... I don't think there was any tension in it. And I think that was the problem that really ruined it for me. The stakes never changed. And so once I kind of realised what was happening the first time, I was very much kind of not... It was lackluster on the second, third, and fourth time when he finally escapes and wins.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
I will say, in my opinion, that's a pitfall of kind of that kind of form of storytelling, cat and mouse.
Yeah.
Not to say that you can't have an exciting, intense cat and mouse, and not to say that, in fact, that's what a good writer should be trying to do with cat and mouse, right? They should be trying to change it. I think
it's because nothing changed.
But I think that's a pitfall of kind of like a mediocrity in that kind of form of storytelling, which it suffers, unfortunately.
And the same film did this, and I kind of realized that it's just kind of like the girl gets away, and then she gets caught, and then she gets away, and then she gets caught, and then she gets away, and then like she gets stabbed in the spine. And
I think you can kind of argue that it works in this case, not particularly well. Like, it is very tropey and it's very formulaic, but like with this whole concept of the character of Mick Taylor being just an unstoppable force, you know he's going to win.
Yeah,
like that's why they can escape as many times as they want.
Doesn't matter.
Mick Taylor's gonna win.
Yeah,
like it kind of just continues pushing on, and like especially with that whole thing we were talking about earlier about, you know, people just going, my opinion's right, your opinion's wrong, I'm going to win.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like it's just kind of, they're not going to give up. Like they're going to be an unrelenting force until they win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, even though it's a little bit formulaic, I feel like in regards to the characterization of how the movies are set, I feel like it works. Not particularly well, but
I agree.
Like I can see what they were trying to do if that's what they were trying to do.
Okay. Well, yeah, maybe that's what they were attempting, but I just didn't think it was very...
I mean,
it wasn't fun, I think. It's like, and maybe not meant to be fun, but it wasn't scary or tense or kind of well done. I was kind of like, I really quickly was like, he's going to get away. And then, like, this movie has, what, another hour left? I know how this hour is going to play out.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think so, especially watching, like, the first one, actually both of them, you kind of get this understanding that, A, Mick Taylor is an unrelenting force, and B, that he's always going to win. So that C, it never really gets tense because you kind of... By the third time it happens, by the, you know, they say three makes a pattern. By the third time it happens, the escape and then getting recaptured, you know that it's not going to change, really.
Yeah.
And it kind of, you kind of lose hope. And when you lose hope, you lose interest and you lose kind of motivation
to care about those characters.
Exactly. Because why care about something that's going to 100% go
and end the exact same way that it ended two times?
And I feel like the issue here is more that, well, maybe not an issue, but what we would expect from this kind of storytelling, which can be seen in a lot of other movies, is that they're usually given, like you were saying, the stakes change, or they're given some sort of greater
advantage or
hope last minute,
and
then that can get snatched away. That creates greater tension because it drops down. But in this movie,
instead of hope, it's kind of like he just starts the car and drives away, or like, and he finds... I guess when he finds a house, it's like a little bit of hope, but that's kind of very quick.
Well, even in the first film at the end, when the second English girl escapes and she has the car, pulls her over, and then, you know,
and you got the coffee
and then he fucking snipes her from 500 yards away. Like, that's like, okay, there might actually be hope, especially because you don't know how that movie's going to end
yet. That's true, that's true.
Like, yes, one of them's missing because, like, if there's a big pitfall in the first film, it's that they, once Ben gets captured... Yeah. That's it. You don't see him for about 40 minutes.
And which is why you were making those comments at the very start of the podcast that, you know, it seems very hell-bent to violence against women.
Because
which,
they literally just like, oh, and there was also a guy and he gets out, so don't worry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, that's weird. Yeah. Also, I didn't like the exploding truck. Because
I don't know how you can not love that scene. That scene is phenomenal.
It just felt totally wrong.
I strongly disagree.
I guess maybe I watched it wrong, and you two were expecting an exploitation film, and I went there expecting the horror from the first one, and it...
Okay, but you can't tell me that you weren't expecting something like that to happen, when not even 5 minutes before, there was a scene where he just ran over about 40 kangaroos in...
I thought that was also dumb, and I was like, this is dumb, and then it followed it with a dumber scene, and I was like, how is this also dumb? I just didn't
like that. No, look, I didn't disagree. I thought the kangaroo hand explosion was dumb.
It was dumb.
But I don't think it was necessarily totally wrong, because I guess I picked up fairly early that the tone was incredibly different from the first. Yeah. Number two is
I probably
like,
should have picked that up when they
totally different
shot the first police officer's head. And it was
see, that's
it was almost as if someone had sawed it in half. Yeah. It was like a clean half.
It
and I was
exploded.
Like,
it was
stupid. And then he lit the police officer on fire in the car. And I was like, this is...
Do you know what? Actually, so the first one feels like I'm trying to think of horror directors that I know of that kind of. I can't think of, but the first one is like a, obviously a gritty slow burn.
Mm.
The second one feels more like if Tarantino was working.
First one's a bit more like Hostel.
Hostel. You know what I mean? And the second one is kind of almost like Tarantino. It's kind of gratuitous. It's kind of crazy on the violence. It's kind of like.
You've kind of got characters back and forth talking about like.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like,
I don't know.
I guess I was fortunate enough to pick up that tonal difference. Yeah. Very early on, so for that, and because I picked up that tonal difference, that in turn led to me actually somewhat enjoying number two.
Okay,
I also feel like they're very much a product of the times that they were made. Because, like, you look at the first one that came out in 2005, if I remember correctly, and that was torture porn peak. So, Hostel, Saw, Passion of the Christ. We had all those torture porn films. where they were just doing all this stuff. And then you look at 2013, where 8 years later, where Wolf Creek 2 comes out, and like kind of not exploitation, but like more, but
it's dipping
more,
it's
going over the top.
Yeah.
That would kind of come back in style a little bit. Like you look at films like Inglourious Basterds, like Django Unchained.
Yeah. Even Grindhouse movies, like the
Death Proof.
Yeah.
Planet Terror.
They've kind of like come back in style since the first one came out. So you can see like
first one.
Wolf Creek 2 kind of playing homage of sorts to that very like idea. Style.
Which there are like there is a lot of Australian movies like that did have like Australian horror movies like Razorback where it is like it was at the time of like exploitation. Even Mad Max is certainly like exploitation. Yeah. But like yeah, I don't know, like tonally.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't really have... Anyone have any final notes or topics or anything they want to mention that I have forgot? I mean, I will mention I did like the hand scene in number two, but again, I don't think it was great.
I think that was like that. Far and beyond the strongest scene of the thing.
Yeah.
Of the movie. And like, even then, I don't think it was amazing. But it was solid.
It also ends with transphobia, I think. Where he's like, I need you to put on the dress. And he's like, oh, you're a big old poofter. And it's like, no, you fucking call me a poofter. And then I was like, kill you.
Yeah.
Why did you have to end it like this? Yeah, this is weird. It's not very woke, is what I'm trying to say.
No, it's not. But at this, no.
Not very PC movie.
It's not very woke. And yet at the same time, though, it's...
The wokest movie.
I feel like it's actually a pretty decent movie to watch as of right now. If you're kind of aware of the rising...
non-wokeness,
nationalism, and that, and the associated rhetoric with that. And if you guys are interested in that kind of stuff, I would recommend. I would kind of recommend.
I think you're looking at it very deeply because I don't believe these movies are that deep.
I reckon the second one definitely got to that level. Like that got like to what, that level, what we've I think reached is like a very basic understanding of that film.
Yeah.
Because like, and that's goes back to that whole scene where he's talking to Ryan Corr in the place.
Do you remember what that guy's name was?
It was,
Was it Johnny?
No.
Little Johnny.
No.
I don't remember.
I just know it's Ryan Corr.
Just British.
Yeah. But then again, I can't name. I know Ben because he shows up in the TV series. Yeah. But other two, like, I don't know the English backpackers' names.
British dude.
Yeah. But with Ryan Corr, that whole scene, like, you can tell because Mick Taylor spent the entire film hunting this guy down.
Yeah.
So you're expecting just pure torture porn.
Yeah.
And then he starts... fucking singing Time Kangaroo Dance for it.
Yeah, which was weird.
And then, because he's fucking panicked and he's like...
I'll get it.
And because he's realised that Mick Taylor's just kind of going as an unrolling force about patriotism.
Yeah.
Like, on a very base level. So, like, when he starts singing Time Kangaroo Dance for it, he doesn't immediately get murdered. Yeah. And that's why Mick Taylor's so willing to kind of put the knife down for a second, have a chat with him.
Have a beer with him.
Yeah, and have a drink with him because he's like... okay, yeah, you're being appreciative of our culture. You're being appreciative of... You're showing, essentially, Australian values.
Yeah.
And that I can appreciate. Hence why I'm not going to murder you straight up. It's only when things go south because he starts being a smug little fuck about it. No, and also he brings up Douglas Jardine, so he just, like, pre-leaves his hand cut off.
But also he wins and he says, yeah, I said you could get out of here, but I didn't say you could leave.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, he's still English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, so at the end of the day, he's still not Australian.
Yeah,
you can show all the Australian values you want, but if you're not Australian in the mind of Mick Taylor, you're not Australian.
Right, yeah.
And by being British, he was never going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the point of the film. That's what it's trying to make. And that's what that whole scene is. And that's why, like, that's I really like that scene.
Me too. And that's why I think it's actually genuinely quite relevant as of right now. Because that kind of, you know, that kind of mindset and rhetoric is really apparent as of right now.
Especially, like, these last couple of weeks. Like, we've seen, when we're recording this, two Green senators have been forced to resign because they're not Australian. Because they held dual citizenship with Canada and New Zealand.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that begs another question. Like, what is an Australian? And, like, this film is trying... These films trying are trying to paint,
trying to paint a picture
of what trying Australian
to narrow in on, like, what the sort of idea of what...
Or what some could consider is Australian.
Like, that's why Mick Taylor, just in regards to, like, character, costume and stuff...
Yeah.
He is very iconic. Like, you think of True Blue, you think of a guy in a white beater with a fucking cowboy hat and a gun.
Yeah.
That's what Mick Taylor is. Like, it just plays up to...
Like, white chest hair.
Yeah, like, it just plays up to those beer belly.
It's, yeah.
Of what you expect to be a true blue Aussie.
Again, you know a dude like that.
Yeah.
You know someone like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think that's why, like, I really enjoy at the second half of Wolf Creek 2, I think it's really quite good.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that they kind of expand on that a little bit in the TV series, like, I think Wolf Creek's a franchise that's gotten better as it's gone along.
Yeah.
I'm yet to watch a TV show, but I am more interested in the concept of that show than I am.
Yeah, I definitely recommend if you enjoy the movies, you'd really enjoy the show. If you weren't a fan of the movies, then you might not get an enjoyment out of the show. It really depends, like, with at least it depends on how much you enjoy Mick Taylor, because this isn't Wolf Creek; it's Mick Taylor's story,
Mick Taylor's Chronicle.
Yeah, it's Outback retellings of a legend, and that legend is Mick Taylor. And if you're not a fan of the character, you're not going to enjoy any of the movies. You're not going to enjoy the show.
Yeah,
you have to enjoy the character, and that's what Wolf Creek is. Wolf Creek's the character.
I agree. So if you guys haven't watched it, I don't know why you're listening to this. First of all, but secondly, if you do watch it,
we talked about like 40 minutes.
If you do watch it, and you do watch it back to back, respect the tonal difference between one and two.
Yeah,
because that will change a difference in your appreciation of
it. Do we want to rate the first one now?
Yep.
I'll go first because I'm going to upset a lot of people. I'm going to give this two. No, sorry, no, three. I'll give the second one. So I did not enjoy this. I don't think it was suspenseful. I don't think it was very good horror. I didn't like any of the characters very much. I found it very poor the whole way through. And it's not like I don't like horror. Because I don't think this was my kind of film. And again, very subjective, but I still did not enjoy it. So I'm going to give it 2.
Fair enough. I thought it was...
No, 3. Fuck. I keep getting ahead of myself.
Say 2.5.
No, yet.
Yeah. Wolf Creek 1. Are we going to do...
We'll do 1 and then we'll go 2.
Okay. So Wolf Creek 1, I give it about a 5.5. I think it was a nice little... I respect it as a film to revive the industry in Australia. I think that's great. And I can understand to some degree why this movie was the movie to revive aspects in the industry. I think it does the slow burn fairly well. And I like the idea of the concept of almost like the Australian boogeyman. Actually, when Brad was saying that if you kind of treat the environment as a character, which I think is brilliant, and I 100% agree with it, if you treat the environment as a character, you can almost get even a greater appreciation of what's
going on. I think that's something that you need to do, and it's probably not just limited to, like, Australian movies,
for a lot of movies.
You know, for example, like I said, Walkabout before, Wake in Fright, even Mad Max to a certain extent, in parts, it kind of becomes, particularly... like Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thunderdome just like nestles itself into like, we're going to use the environment to sort of tell a story.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah,
that's a big part of that. But yeah, like those, for Australian movies, it definitely becomes a character, whether it's exploring ideas of like isolation, because it is sparse. If you haven't been out to that part of the world, it's very sparse. And it's like the idea that like, you're alone out there, but there's something else.
There's something out there. Yeah,
it's kind of it's kind of terrifying.
And so, you know, for that reason, I give it a 5.5. I think I enjoyed it enough, but I don't think it was an amazing movie.
Just quickly, contextually, we probably mentioned it, but we've been here for an hour now. Wolf Creek 1 got 53% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, we didn't mention it.
And Wolf Creek 2 got 48 on Rotten Tomatoes. So just quickly, I rated it much worse. Keen's about on par.
I'm gonna have to say 5 because am just going off of like a movie that I saw about a decade ago. So, and I'm just, I was just talking about my out of my ass.
Nice.
Pretty much.
Good show.
But like about what I know about the movie and then what I saw of the second one, which, you know, I do remember
back half.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, I can talk contextually about what it was. So I'm going to have to give it a 5 because I didn't actually watch the movie. I didn't do the homework, much like classic. The entirety of my academic career.
Very good.
But yeah, I'll have to give it a 5.
Right. Like, that's fair. Vote.
Yeah, I think with Wolf Creek 1, I think it's the weaker of the films.
Yeah.
But I do agree with your characterization of like the outback that Brad was making.
Mm-hmm.
And especially like it harkens back to like Alien, I guess, and like, you know, how in space no one can hear screen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that but on Earth, and it's a lot more localized. But also, I just do want to bring up quickly, I think Wolf Creek 1, if I remember correctly, is the one that Roger Ebert said was the worst film he's ever seen.
Yeah, he
like,
hated
it. Like, there was one critic stars. Who just hated this film.
He probably watched it and he was like,
I don't understand.
I don't understand this. Are they speaking a foreign language? I don't know.
Where are the subtitles? yeah, Wolf Creek was...
He didn't like Wolf Creek for the same reason I didn't like Wolf Creek, because it was violence against women, the movie, and it just made it seem gratuitous.
But it's not even that, like, when we talk about violence against women, there are films that do it significantly worse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there are, like, just so many worse films in terms of violence against women. It's just because this, especially this film in Australia in that time, there was that whole huge campaign.
Yeah,
violence against women, Australia says no.
And they're like, we'll make a movie where we just murder women.
Yeah, so, like, very, it was very topical, I guess, at the time.
Yes.
Like, I wouldn't say that the violence is particularly bad. Plus, like it's there's definitely worse films, but in regards to violence against women, but like it's still not great.
Mm.
But that's like saying violence in general is
in
bad.
Movies, yeah. It's like just it's that's kind of a tough thing because it's kind of like
it's not even here that I think is a problem.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're going for, like, a shocking film, and I think that's what they were going for with the first one. I think, like, and like it did come out and was like, this is one of the most shocking films you'll ever see.
Yeah.
It's like, so the easy way to do that is, like, I think that's even possibly why Evil Dead kind of works.
Mm.
Because of just how, like, Evil Dead 1 is so, like, it treats its female characters
there's
like
a, there's a girl
shit.
Who literally gets raped by a tree.
Yeah, she gets raped by a tree. And it's like, that's why that's so shocking to you. Because, like
oh
it or not,
God.
Yeah, you're like, huh.
There's kind of something that leaves sort of a pit in your stomach there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, if you're going for that effect, which I think that they were.
I don't think it hit that mark for me.
Because if you...
Which was a problem for the movie.
Well, I think you look at how the films were advertised themselves as well is also kind of a crucial point. Like, you look at Wolf Creek 2, the poster and the images for that were all Mick Taylor.
Yeah.
You look at the first one,
the
iconic image is the girl on the road covered in blood.
Yeah.
Like, that's how they were trying to portray that film. They were trying to go down this shocking path. Like, I don't think it entirely worked, but that's just... my opinion. Like I'm not saying these films are great. They're not phenomenal films. They're not phenomenal horror films, but they're very well done in how they approach what they were trying to go.
Okay.
I'm going to give Wolf Creek 1 a 6.5.
Okay.
Like, I think it's a very solid film.
I was going to give it a 6.5. And then I decided to change my mind. So then Wolf Creek 2.
Wolf Creek 2, I give a low rating.
Yeah.
I give that a 2.
Two, wow.
Which I can see is already upset count.
I am triggered already.
I just don't... Wasn't for me. I don't think it was horror very well. I don't think it was exploitation very well. I just was like, this is just dumb. And they just got a bigger budget and they were like, we better just use all our budget for no particular reason and to no effect. And I didn't like that very much.
Fair enough. I give Wolf Creek 2 a 6.5. I just enjoyed it a lot because of the relevance. And also that one scene is actually pretty good. Like, you can make a short film out of that one scene with Mick Taylor and British dude.
Right, cool.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah. I'll give the tail end of Wolf Creek 2 a 6.
That's the better end anyway.
Yeah, I was like, I don't need to see the start.
Admittedly, that was the better end of
the movie. Yeah, I think you can kind of be like, oh yeah, I can... Again, because you can kind of go into horror movies and just be like, switch your brain off.
Yeah.
And then
and then
just be like, oh yeah, I like watching people get dismembered because nobody loved me when I was a child. But like, you know, there's kind of a cathartic sort of element to it that it's kind of, and I think that's why people watch Saw. It's like the people who loved Saw when I was like in high school were like 15-year-old girls, and I'm like, they're like, yeah, let's go and watch the news. I never got into it. I never got into Saw. I was like, 1 and 2, I think, are really good films.
Yeah.
And I think beyond that, it's just shite. But I know girls, you know, not saying that women can't enjoy horror or anything like that, but I know, like, you know, otherwise...
not work, get him!
thought crime. who, like, every time a Saw movie would come out, they just reveled in it, and I'm just like... So, I mean, there's probably maybe like a cathartic element to it that...
Well, there has to be. I mean, the fact that they keep making movies because people keep watching them, right? Yeah. So, yeah, maybe we're just missing something that stops us from enjoying it at that level of catharsis. Because,
it's a weird thing that you just kind of like...
But I agree. I shut my brain off when I'm watching horror films. And I enjoy it.
I tried to do that, and it wasn't tense, and I wasn't scared. And at no point did I really, like, find that even funny or amusing. And I was kind of like, this is very poor. It kind of misses all the bases for me. And I was like, for what it was meant to be. I didn't enjoy any aspects. Now for Cal to yell at me and say I'm objectively wrong.
I mean, you are, but that's besides the point. Look, I really like Wolf Creek 2. As you guys were talking about just then, like, it's very important to, like, kind of shut your brain off to exploring horror films. And I feel like if you just do that on a base level, this movie's quite good. Like, like, if this movie was just for that sole purpose, I'd give it, like, a 6.5. But, like, with that one scene that you have with Ryan Kaur and with John Jarrett, like, it really adds another fucking layer. And that's a layer that you don't see in a lot of horror films.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, these are films... Because, like, that's sort of a thing. Like, when you make a film set in Australia, you know that perhaps the broader appeal to it isn't going to be the United States. It's not going to be overseas markets. Yeah. Just because of, like, the nature of it. You know, I like you can argue that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, and you sort of go on about, like, we should call it Australian film, we should call it films. Because, you know...
I understand.
We should not be making Australian films. Yeah. We should just be making films.
Yeah. So, it's like, it makes me wonder in, like, when we're seeing that, are we kind of drawing that thing... And I understand, like, that sort of, like, you know, racism and... possibly like xenophobia and all that sort of stuff is kind of something that we see in Australia, but it's like an overseas market, maybe less so. Like, you know, each, like, horror movies work on like a weird psychological level, right? Yeah. And like the types of horror movies that get made in different countries kind of have different connotations. Godzilla in Japan has like this sort of nuclear connotation.
Yeah, because
whereas in, like, you know, you adapt Godzilla into an American thing and that context, all that context sort of changes, and it just becomes, like, for example, the Godzilla remake. I'm getting a little bit off topic here, but the Godzilla remake is all about the destruction, and that, you know, you got to think, like, in America, that idea of, like, sort of that 9/11 imagery, like, hits right to the center of it because it's ingrained into the public psyche. So it's like, you know, horror kind of works differently in different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So does Wolf Creek work differently in an Australian context than it does in an American context?
Excellent question. For me, I would say Wolf Creek 2 does, especially because of the relevancy, especially in that one scene. And Wolf Creek 1 does because of our knowledge. Well, most Australians know about Ivan Milat, the backpackers.
Yeah.
Because he's a myth, he's a legend, you know what I mean?
He's not a myth, we call him.
Well, no, but I mean, like, he's the man himself. The man himself and what he's done has become so
ingrained in Australian culture
that he's almost transcended being a human being, because now we know him for his deeds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When we think of Ivan Milat, we don't think of the man that's in jail. No. We think of the man that committed all these terrible atrocities at the time in, like, the
90s. The grinning, sort of grimacing, sort of helpful Australian.
So I would say, in my opinion, that we probably do rate... That's probably another reason why Roger Ebert gave it such a low rating as well. If it were Australian, I would say maybe marginally higher. I know he hated the film.
But he hated the second one too.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But yeah, because I feel like some of the context is lost.
Yeah.
See, I feel like, especially with the first one, that's understandable. But I feel like with the second one, that context is more understandable, especially now.
Maybe
it was lost when it came out, but, like, I can see why these films came out and why they were such a breakout hit internationally. Yeah. Because they had, like, a decent story. They had decent horror. It was good enough. Yeah. But the second one, I feel like, especially now, would work a lot better in America.
No, I agree.
Especially because when you've got that whole Republicans versus Democrats, you've got Republicans wanting to be like, America's America, everyone that isn't American should get out.
Yeah.
Like, that whole thing, that's just what we have now.
Yeah.
But it's just transposed. Like, if this film, if Wolf Creek 2 was about a guy killing people in the fucking fields of Utah.
Yeah.
It would still make just as much sense, and it would still be just as relevant to us as it would be. Like, just because this is Australian, it gives us a little bit more of a kick, but, like, if you just replace
that's the thing... That's why I don't like
because
America,
if they're
it
like,
just makes as much sense.
If they're like, oh, you look like, you know, for example, I'm some hack screenwriter in Australia, I'm like, oh, you look like Bert Newton. Nobody in America is going to be like... Bert Newton.
We know who that is.
We know who that is. You know what I mean? So it kind of, I think it kind of probably works on that level.
Like, there are a few references that are lost. Like, if you put this film onto an American audience, like the they're not going to know Don who the fuck Don Bradman is.
Yeah, no, but you just change it to Babe Ruth.
Yeah, exactly. But then the problem is, like, if you, that's the thing with localizing it. Like, if they were going to localize that film, they'd have to reshoot the entire film.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, you can't just change that one scene and be like, I've spent the whole film chasing you in the Australian outback. Who's the greatest baseballer of all time? Yeah. Like, it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, what do you give the rating for?
Look, if this was just a straight up film, 6.5, but the fact that this adds so much more to it, like the characterization of Mick Taylor, I'm going to give this a 7.5, maybe an 8.
7.5 and an 8?
I think Wolf Creek's a very good film.
Wow. Wolf Creek 2, you mean?
Riley Circling and Cal is wrong.
So wait, before... Before
hit the Cal is wrong button.
Before we sign off, can we do just a quick recap? No commentary, just the numbers of Wolf Creek 1 and 2.
Number 1 is 3. Wolf Creek 1, I rate 3.
And then do 2
and then
as
Wolf
well.
Creek 2.
Oh, and then Wolf Creek 2, I rate 2.
Okay, so Wolf Creek 1, I rate a 5.5, and Wolf Creek 2, I rate a 6.5.
I rate Wolf Creek 1, 5. Having not seen it
in many years.
And I rate the end half of Wolf Creek 2 6.
Yeah.
Why are you here?
The most crucial parts. Wolf Creek 1, 6.5. Wolf Creek 2, 7.5.
I think I'm going to watch the show, though, because that sounds...
Yeah, yeah, I would recommend the show. If you enjoyed the films at any level,
just quickly, watch that. The show is about a girl whose family is killed by Mick Taylor. She escapes, and she's like... Fuck Mick Taylor, I'm gonna kill
him. Yeah, so it's the same setup as the Wolf Creek movies.
Which
like, he kills a bunch of foreigners.
Yeah.
And then this girl escapes, and she's like, I'm going to get revenge. And the whole thing is just, I'm gonna chase Mick Taylor through the outback.
It's Kill Bill in the outback.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I really enjoy it. And plus, all those themes that we've touched on the supernatural, like myth-telling story of Mick Taylor. We've touched on, you know, basic horror blends, and we've touched on the outback as a character. All three of those become more prominent in the series, and like it really adds another layer to the whole franchise, and I think that's why I enjoy the film so much.
That's a recommendation.
I would recommend it's definitely the best Australian TV show I've seen in a while.
Yeah,
that isn't Danger 5.
Fair enough. Alrighty, I think that brings us to the end. If anybody has any final comments, although I feel like Cal's sufficiently mad at me now.
I'm quite salty.
Keaton, you good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Brad,
done.
Have not seen it. Cal,
yeah, no.
Alright. This brings us to the end. I've been Riley.
I'm still Keaton.
I'm Brad.
I'm also here.
Alrighty, thank you for listening.